They say to keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. What if we're unable to tell the difference? How do we know who to let into our lives when it's the only life we have and the wrong decision may cost us our future? Hi everyone, welcome back to my channel. My name is Kimberlea. If you've never been here before, nice to finally meet you. Have you ever received unwanted attention? Ever turned someone down? Rejected their advances because you have the right to choose who you allow into your life and give your time to? What if that decision changed the rest of your life? This story will make you reevaluate a common situation we have probably all found ourselves in. You never know what might be going on in someone else's head. Evil, obsessive thoughts that lead to the absolutely unthinkable. Today's case is going to be hard to hear. It will stick with you. You will probably be asking yourself what I have been asking since I've heard about these horrific events that unfolded on a summer night in 2007. And that question is, why? I want to let you know that I've had personal contact and spoken to someone very close to this case. There are things that they would like viewers to know, so please stay for that special and very important message in this video. It would mean so much to not only me, but to them. It's not all the time we get these opportunities, so I'm very thankful that I can be a voice in these cases. I've also learned so much and something very disheartening about shows that feature these true crime stories, which I will let you know about in this video. First, I want to introduce you to Christine Kent, a Connecticut native that moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida around 30 years ago in the late 90s. She was in her mid-20s at the time. And this case hits home for me like many other Florida cases, but specifically because of Fort Lauderdale. That's where I grew up, and that's where I spent most of my life. Florida is known for some of the most horrific crimes, and it hurts me to know that there are monsters living among us, especially in places that we call paradise. Stories like this one make me grateful that I have never been hurt when I've been living there, because this can happen to me, it can happen to you, it could happen to anyone. Christine was a gorgeous, vivacious redhead. She was a very beautiful woman. She was full of life. She loved to travel. She was athletic and active. One of her favorite hobbies was snow skiing in Lake Tahoe and hiking in the Swiss Alps. She was also a model. She had long legs and a captivating smile. As a matter of fact, one of Christine's best features were her legs. They were long enough for modeling and strong and sculpted as a result of the time that she spent skiing. Christine, being an outdoor enthusiast, was drawn to Florida because of the sunny weather, the beaches, nature, the upbeat lifestyle. And I don't know about Christine, but I remember the attractive people. Everywhere you turn, there is a sun-kissed person with a bright smile that was illuminated as it contrasted against their tanned skin. It's an outdoor lover's dream. There's never a dull moment in Fort Lauderdale. You can always find something to do and someone to do it with. It was the perfect home for Christine. She had visited once when she was on vacation, and she fell in love with the area. She even saw herself settling down there, eventually getting married and having a family. She just thought it was a beautiful place to live. Christine loved making new friends. She was very outgoing. She believed in God and being kind to others. She was always willing to help. So it's no surprise she found herself providing care to patients in the medical field. She worked full-time, and most of her workdays consisted of her providing therapy to patients that needed pain management at a chiropractor's office. While managing the front desk, answering phones, and making appointments, she was very professional, yet personable. She always made sure the patients had a good experience, that their pain was under control as much as it could be, and she accommodated them with appointments to maintain their treatments. She loved her job. Many of her regular patients were warm and friendly, so it made it easy for her to do what she did. Christine's weekends were a little bit different. To make ends meet, she had a second job as a promo model. Christine was able to do a lot of modeling through many different agencies. There was never a shortage of events, including trade shows at convention centers. One trade show that she would work at pretty often was the Gun and Knife Show. Those who attended this sort of event were primarily men. And you could have guessed, they gave her a lot of attention. It's not always bad, but these situations do invite unwanted attention. It's a job. It's not a bar where you're expected to go look for a hookup or even a hangout, Christine tried to maintain her professionalism at both her weekday job and trade shows. Although she was never harsh, she definitely made it a point to let a guy know if she wasn't interested. At the doctor's office, it was a little easier for Christine to let male patients know she wasn't open to dating them, especially when she had no desire but wanted to make sure she wasn't offending them. She would just use the excuse it was against the workplace policy to date patients because it was true. She wasn't allowed. Most patients understood and they didn't push it. She had to maintain a good relationship with the patients because she didn't want the office to lose business and she didn't want to be fired. I can kind of imagine if you're in a position where you have to administer any kind of physical touch therapy, a guy could form an attraction to a therapist, especially if they're already physically attracted to them. It was a normal weekday in April of 2003, and Christine was greeting one of the patients. He introduced himself as Alan Sinclair. She did the routine check-in, completing the patient intake, Alan filling out his paperwork, explaining what his issues were. He had hurt his back, and he explained it usually got better on its own, but this time it wasn't. So he was there for some pain management. It was normal to be cordial and talk to patients, maybe ask them about their day, how the traffic was, you know, light chit chat. So they did that together. And Alan seemed like a nice guy. He was kind of shy, kind of quiet. He had the boyish looks, brown eyes, kind of curly black hair. And he wore these glasses that fit his face perfectly. He also had really cute dimples. Alan was around 5'10", maybe 178 pounds. He wasn't bad looking. Christine actually thought he was kind of cute. Once his appointment was over, Alan came back to the front desk to make his next appointment. Totally routine, uneventful, the type of appointment she saw every day. She asked Alan, "How was your appointment?" He said it was great. She was pleased and told him that was wonderful. She was so glad that they could help him. She explained that the doctor had prescribed him some medication and they wanted to see him back in a few days for another therapy session. This is the first time Christine started to feel a little uncomfortable. While attempting to book his next appointment, she went ahead and offered him a date and time that would work for him. He said it would be perfect, but then that's when he caught her off guard and said, "Or what about tonight? We could, you know, have a nice dinner together." She knew, like many times before, she could get out of this quickly. She explained that the doctor really frowned upon employees dating patients. Alan kind of insisted. He just kind of wasn't giving it up easily. Christine let him know that her boss was a stickler for the rules and she was hoping he would get the picture. Once again, he kind of challenged it. And see, it's a little difficult in these situations because sometimes certain guys don't see it as a no. They assume it's a not right now or sorry, I wish I could, but I can't because of the position I'm in, that kind of thing. Some people take it to mean yes, they still have a chance, but it's just not the right timing. And it seems as though Alan was one of those people. Whether it was a joke or he was serious, he asked if it meant he should just find another doctor's office, thereby circumventing the rules, being able to be free to get closer to Christine. She played it off well. She was used to guys coming on pretty strong, so she laughed. And she told him, "You know what, it'll probably be better if we just remained professional," and that she was flattered. He seemed okay with it. She told him, "You know, have a great day. I'll see you at your next appointment." Christine treated Alan at the clinic about 2 times a week for several months. So I guess you could say they kind of got to know each other. That's a pretty significant amount of time. But they weren't friends. They were acquaintances. It was a professional relationship. And he wasn't her type. And she wasn't the type to risk her job over a pity date just to avoid hurting a guy's feelings. She was a confident woman. She knew her worth. She wasn't interested in settling for anyone. And Christine was dating. It was nothing serious. She was casually dating at the time. So it wasn't as though there was a shortage of men, but she wasn't actively looking for a relationship. When you're as pretty as Christine, it may feel like men are always looking in your direction. I can imagine Christine having to shoo men away all the time, especially at the gun and knife show. I've been to an event like this, and I've seen it firsthand how guys stand there at the booths practically drooling. And these events do tend to hire attractive women, and it makes sense. They know their biggest clientele and target audience are men. So of course, putting a lovely lady at the booths is going to attract men, even if it's for no other reason than to flirt. Men may even think these women choose these jobs because they want men fawning over them. But for Christine, that wasn't the case. She was just trying to make ends meet. Men would gather around the tables and watch the demonstration she would put on to showcase the products for sale. But a lot of the men would stick around to talk to models like Christine and just hang out at the booth. Christine enjoyed her job, but she didn't enjoy the unwanted attention that came with it. It made her uncomfortable, very uneasy, and she tried her best to be kind. That's just who she was. One afternoon, she spotted a familiar face. It was Alan from the chiropractic center. He had come to a few of the shows before, and he would say hello and hang around and talk a bit, and they would just chit-chat. He had always been a patient at the time, but finally, he was no longer being treated at the doctor's office that she worked at. Even though some of the patrons could come off sketchy or odd, Alan really didn't. He was friendly. She knew him. He wasn't exactly a friend, as I said before, but he certainly wasn't a stranger. And he asked her if maybe she was open to grabbing a drink. Christine thought about it, and she decided to say yes. There couldn't be that much harm in it. He seemed like a nice guy. She didn't have those same restrictions as she did before because he wasn't a patient. So why not? She accepted his offer. When it was time for them to leave, Alan told her that he was going to drive and he knew the perfect place for them to have lunch, grab a drink, and hang out, and then he would drop her back off later. Remember the last time Christine got that uncomfortable feeling when they were at the doctor's office and the previous awkward exchange with Alan? Well, it gets worse. Yeah. All along, Christine, knowing how many cool things there is to do and fun places to go in Fort Lauderdale, pictured she and Alan would sit at the beach at a cool cafe or a bar and hang out and have a drink. But Alan's idea of a good time was far from what she had envisioned. However, Christine tried to stay open-minded. Let me tell you, this would either freak me out or impress me. I wonder if it was someone that I had an interest in, if it would seem romantic, and if not, would I think it's creepy? Once everything was set in motion, she realized this had to have been planned, hoping she would agree, which would be even weirder, and he had the same intention to ask her and then see if she said yes. Either way, they pull up at a park, they get out. It was a pretty day outside, but that didn't make much of a difference. Christine felt really weird about the situation. Alan goes to the back of his truck. He pulls out a picnic basket, a bottle of wine, blankets, snacks. He planned an elaborate date for Christine. She was trying her best not to jump the gun and be rude, but she was definitely uncomfortable. She felt blindsided. She decided to go along with it at first, and he literally takes out a radio, starts playing the soft, romantic music. He laid the blanket down, took out the snacks, poured them a glass of wine. It was Chardonnay, not Christine's favorite, but she was nice, so she didn't refuse. Everything seemed okay, but then he tried to get Christine to dance with him. He was actually grabbing her hands and being really insistent. Not only that, he leaned in close as if he was going to try to kiss her. She really did not like being put in this position, the attempted PDA with a guy that you hardly know. The whole thing just felt off. How would you feel? Has this ever happened to you? Because I'm pretty shy in person. I would actually be embarrassed, especially because there's people around. The whole thing felt wrong to Christine, and I don't blame her for feeling that way. She refused to get up and dance with him. She said no a few times. She told him, "I'm sorry, I just don't want to dance." She was probably expecting him to be understanding. After all, many of us usually try to put our best foot forward with a new love interest, but not Alan. She could tell he was disappointed. His whole mood just changed in an instant, making it kind of seem like everything he had done up to that point was just an act. Christine was so uncomfortable. She got the nerve to tell him she didn't want to dance. She didn't want a relationship. If anything, the only thing she would be interested in that moment was a friendship. It was as though something flipped in Alan. He was not even close to being understanding. He was angry. His reaction, this sudden switch, it made no sense. He acted outraged. It wasn't a normal reaction. He quickly snatched the wine glass out of her hand and he dumped out their wine glasses. Then he just angrily packed everything up. To some people, this rejection can hurt really badly. We've all been rejected in one way or another, but they say unrequited love, if you can even call it love, it can be very dangerous. He did put together this nice date. Remember Jay from the torso in the container case? He took Marjorie on a first date that was very similar, but instead of dancing, he wanted to take pictures of her. A little creepier, but he didn't get mad like Alan. In this case, Alan wouldn't even talk to Christine. He just started to go back to his car. She followed him, probably wishing she would have driven herself and never agreed to this to begin with. She was too nice. He drove in silence. Didn't say a word to her the entire drive. That didn't stop Christine from trying to express how sorry she was if she hurt his feelings, and that wasn't her intention, but he didn't respond. It started out as a casual afternoon, with Christine thinking maybe he'd turn out to be someone she'd like to spend more time with. She knew that not every relationship starts out with sparks. Sometimes people grow on one another. If you get along really well with someone, have a lot in common, you may end up falling in love with them. She never expected it would turn into something this awkward. He dropped her off. They say their goodbyes. She told him, you know, I'll see you around. Sorry, thanks again for the date. But she could tell that he was beyond hurt. He felt really rejected. Christine was a genuinely nice person, a good person. She was a Christian. And sometimes nice women can be the targets of unwanted attention. They can be taken advantage of. Sometimes the biggest flaw is being too nice. So what do we know about Alan? Friends that knew him said he was nice. He was a caring guy. He came from a good family, had a normal childhood, very helpful, generous, had girlfriends, normal, nothing spectacular to report. He was born on November 11th, 1971. You could tell from the moment he met Christine, though, he was smitten. He thought the world of her. He never wanted to give up hope of being with her, even if it was just as friends. He wanted to be a part of Christine's life. But he blew it on the very first date, and Alan and Christine went their separate ways. It had been almost a year. It was around the summer of 2004. Christine was in a really good place in life. She has not seen or heard from Alan. She hadn't even given it much thought. It was hurricane season. There was a big storm coming towards South Florida. That summer, there were two really big ones that hit that area back to back, and then two more later in the same hurricane season. Hurricanes in Florida are dangerous. As Floridians, we prepare no matter what. We take these storms very seriously because they're so unpredictable. Christine lives alone. She doesn't have a serious boyfriend. She's seeing someone at the time, but it's more of a casual thing. So she doesn't exactly have someone to help her put up all her hurricane shutters, bring all of her furniture inside, her planters. Anything that's on the outside of her home would need to be brought inside, because if not, it could fly into a window, fly into your car, break stuff. It's dangerous. Alan happened to work at a woodshed with some of his buddies, and he had been reaching out to friends to see if they needed any help with their hurricane shutters or boarding up their windows. This is truly not uncommon in Florida. I've done it. I've had it done to me. You typically check on your friends and family. When Alan checked in on Christine, she thought it was really kind of him to do that. She was actually missing one board for one of her windows. So he tells Christine they've got to get her windows boarded up and do it fast because she didn't have built-in storm shutters. He drives by her house, looks at her windows, then he lets her know he has the perfect extra piece of wood at his shop. She leaves with Alan in his vehicle, and they went to drive down to Hollywood to go get the piece of wood. But before they got there, they stopped at Alan's to feed his cats. Christine thought they were so adorable. Alan's parents dropped by while Christine and Alan were there. Christine said hello. She introduced herself. They were very nice people. And she overheard Alan telling his parents that he just wanted to make sure they had everything and everything was going to be okay before the storm hit. He was helpful. It seemed like that was just part of his nature. They continued over to Alan's workshop, got the wood, and then drove back to Christine's. Alan did it all. He came right in, all of his tools, everything they needed, and he just got to work. And Christine was very grateful that Alan was willing to help. He even helped one of Christine's friends with all of her hurricane shutters too, and even some other projects around her house. And Christine was really happy that he was so generous with his time. He said that he was more than happy to do that for a friend because that's what friends do. I can't help but wonder if Alan really was this helpful, or if there was another motive. Well, not only did he actually do what he promised and help Christine's friend, but but they started dating. Was he just desperate? Did Alan agree to do the shutters just to get close to Christine's friend, hoping he could date her, knowing that Christine wasn't interested? Or maybe Christine judged Alan too quickly. We'll soon find out. It is always good to know what your close friend thinks about someone. If Alan's new girlfriend reports back that she thinks he's wonderful, then maybe Christine missed the boat. But if she says that he's a bit odd, then you know you weren't mistaken. Just a few weeks later, another hurricane was heading their way. And once again, Alan steps in to help. At this time, Christine was casually dating someone on and off. He was someone she was interested in, but he was just the type that wouldn't commit. However, he would drop by to check on her and ask if she was okay or she needed anything. Alan was just about to be finished with the hurricane shutters. And then the guy Christine had been seeing pulls up to the house, which was actually perfect because Alan was attempting to move this very heavy cement planter by himself. The two guys, they lifted it up together, brought it from the front of the house to the side of the house. And at that point, everything was pretty much done. I mean, the guy that she really liked that dropped by, he didn't have much to help her with because Alan had already taken care of everything. So she was just saying goodbye to him. She leans in, gives him a little kiss, a little peck, but Alan was watching. There really wouldn't be that much of a reason for him to care. He has a girlfriend, but remember, Christine had rejected him. Maybe he was comparing himself to this other guy. Christine turns around and she just met Alan's gaze and she could tell that he felt embarrassed. Alan definitely came off as being a little bit jealous and his attitude changed. And Christine had seen the side of him before that time at the picnic. There's just a look to him, the way his eyes looked, the way his body would tense up, his jaw would tighten. It was uncomfortable. Alan was not happy. He did not seem thrilled to know that another guy stopped by to help. Kind of like Christine may have been using him, taking advantage of his willingness to help her, even though he was the one that offered. But he can't help but feeling like a chump. Christine really didn't want Alan to feel bad. She didn't want him to feel like she had used him. She gives him a hug goodbye. She tells him she can't thank him enough for being so kind. Word got back to Christine about the way Alan felt that night. Her friend that was dating Alan let her know he was upset. He said something along the lines of, "I don't know why she was asking me to help her if she had a boyfriend." But it wasn't her boyfriend. It was just a guy. A guy she couldn't even depend on. Someone who really couldn't be there for her. So Christine was confused. Here's a guy she really doesn't know. She never asked him to help. He was an acquaintance. He offered his assistance out of what seemed like the kindness of his own heart. He's dating her friend. So what gives him the right to act this way? He shouldn't be jealous or upset at all. I know you can't control the way that someone feels though. And sometimes even the person can't really control how they feel, but I guess they can control how they respond. It's hard to know how to respond to someone as seemingly sensitive as Alan. She hopes he will forgive her, but they're all adults. These are men and women in their 30s. However, her friend did end up confiding in her about Alan. A few weeks go by and Christine's friend lets her know they broke up. Of course, Christine felt bad, but that's when her friend tells her something odd that happened after she broke it off with him. She proceeds to explain Alan's mother called, concerned about what happened. His mother, she was angry, and this man is in his late 30s, like I said, a grown man, and his mother is getting in the middle of his romantic relationships. That is odd. I know his friend said he had a normal childhood, but his mom fighting his battles? She tells her to stop calling her son. Alan's hair wasn't real. That's tough for a man. They make much better hair pieces now, but back then, Alan resorted to using a toupee. Poor guy. He had no shame though. The first night he was intimate with her friend, he took it off and he put it on the nightstand. These things can make someone very, very insecure, lose their confidence, feel worthless. I mean, it's very hard for especially men to overcome some of these things. Or Christine's friend could have just been mad. I know a lot of women that just say those things because they're upset. Either way, Christine really did feel bad because piecing everything together, she knew that Alan would be humiliated if he found out that she knew any of this. So she called him up and she got his voicemail. She told him she was sorry to hear that things did not work out with her friend, but she hoped he was doing okay. And he just popped into her head. She wanted to say hello. If he had a chance, he could go ahead and give her a call back. It was nice. It was a caring message. She never got a call. She didn't really want to talk to him. She just didn't want him to think that her friend had shared anything personal with her. Well, at this point, it seems like he's out of her life anyway. Or was he? You know, you're going to find out soon enough. Several years go by, 3 years go by to be exact. And Alan isn't even a thought in Christine's mind. She hasn't heard from him since that stormy day in the summer of 2004. Christine's still doing her modeling. She's also doing 3 gun and knife shows a year. She's also in a serious relationship. She had fallen in love. They were even talking about settling down, getting married, having children together. Christine was excited for what the future may bring. On the night of August 4th, 2007, Christine went out to dinner with a friend. She enjoyed a big meal. It had steak and shrimp. And then on her way home, she stopped at the grocery store to do her weekly grocery shopping. She came home to her empty house all alone and began putting her groceries away. And that's when she heard it, a knock at her door. She looked at the time. It was 10:30 p.m. She definitely wasn't expecting anyone. She thought it was unusual. She doesn't like people just dropping by. She called out, she asked who it was, and she heard a man's voice. He said, "It's Alan." She thought to herself, "I don't know an Alan." It had been so long, it just didn't connect. She was confused. She walked to the door, concerned about who it could be at this time of night. She peered through the peephole, and she realized she recognized him. To her surprise, it was Alan Sinclair on the other side of the door. It's kind of creepy. She didn't really have any reason to fear him. Could she be annoyed? Yes. But fear? No. She opens the door and she's face to face with him. Alan, the man she hasn't seen in 3 years, hasn't spoken to, she's not even close with, she had not invited over, is standing at her door. It's an invasion of privacy. But Christine is a nice person. She asks him, "What are you doing here?" And he explains, well, he hasn't seen her in so long. He was passing through the area and he thought of her. So he decided to drop by just to see if she was home and say hello. Christine said, "Oh, that's a really nice surprise." And she may have been nice, but she was definitely uncomfortable with this. She was going to let it slide though, because Alan was not a stranger. They had a past as acquaintances. He had been helpful and she thought she kind of owed him some politeness at the very least. She welcomes him inside and asks how he's doing. Alan tells her he's doing really well. He's been living out of town, traveling. He's dating a woman. She has a 5-year-old daughter. He's been gone for a couple years, but he had to come back because his mom was sick. Then he explains he actually just got back from a really cool air show and he was getting into photography. Christine knew he had always been really good at photography. He was now getting more and more serious about it. So he asked her if she wanted to see some of his pictures that he had taken. He told her that he had his laptop in his truck and that he'd love to show her. Really? Does this seem odd to you? He hasn't seen you in 3 years and he's stopping by to show you some random photos. Christine says, sure. Too bad they didn't have Ring doorbells back then, because one look at who it was and she just could have pretended she wasn't home. Sort of. You'll find out why I say sort of. She felt like it would have been rude if she didn't let him inside. She figured it won't take more than a few minutes. They'll catch up, he'll show her some photos, and they'll call it a night. It was nearly 11 p.m. He certainly wasn't going to expect to be staying there after midnight. He goes out to his truck, and when he comes back, he's carrying a computer bag. He removes the laptop and places the bag on the ground behind the couch in front of the coffee table. Christine was really not in the mood. It had been a long week. She had already been out that night and she was tired. But again, she thought it wouldn't take that long. She looks at the way he's setting up the laptop. Instead of in the dining room, on the dining room table, he chose a cozy spot on the couch. So they had to, you know, sit together. She wasn't about to make it a big deal. It was fine. So she takes a seat next to him. He opens up his laptop and he starts to show her a slideshow that he put together. It showcased all of his pictures and they were amazing. Christine was complimenting him on how beautiful they were. He talked about how he had a new telephoto lens that could zoom in real close and you would get these perfect pictures. And these were pictures of the Blue Angels. You could literally see the faces of the pilots. That's how zoomed in his lens was. She was really impressed. She liked the photos a lot. Then all of a sudden, She noticed that the slideshow was on repeat, and she was seeing the first photo again. She remembered seeing that photo, and she wondered when Alan was going to stop the slides or whether he had noticed. When he looked over at the screen, he suddenly jumped up and he said, "Oh, excuse me one moment, I just have to go get something." Christine's attention is still on the screen. She remains distracted. When he stood up, he walked over to where his bag was, and if you have no reason to fear him, that would seem pretty normal. He just wanted to grab something else to show her. It was completely unreal, totally unexpected. This could not be happening. He had pulled out a gun and placed it close to her head and cocked it. The sound was so loud. Before she could do anything, he grabbed her hair with one hand and pressed the gun right up to her head with the other. And her heart just sank. She was completely caught off guard. She instantly thought, is he trying to get back at me because I didn't want to go out with him? Is he doing this over that? She thought for sure he was going to shoot her right then and there just because she didn't want to date him. This is the type of story you see in movies, the obsessed stalker that can't take no for an answer. But how is this Christine's reality? He said, "Christine, I want you to listen to me very carefully. I want you to put your head face down on the couch. You're not going to feel anything. I'm not going to hurt you. Just do as I say." Christine was overcome with fear. She was frozen and shocked and thinking to herself, what does he mean I'm not going to feel anything? This man is just going to shoot me in the head. For what? For nothing. She had always been kind to him. And that's when Christine's mind started racing. They say that you see your life flash before your eyes, but Christine wasn't imagining her life. She was envisioning her death. She imagined blood everywhere. She even pictured her cat walking through it, leaving a trail of bloody paw prints behind. She had a vision of her body just lying lifeless in her home and nobody finding it for days, or her mother stumbling upon her and seeing her that way. She did not want her life to end like this, not like this. She was not ready to die. She started to pray. She said, "God, I can't die like this. My life can't end like this." And then this affirmation came to her mind and she thought, "My life is not going to end like this." And somehow in that moment, she gained enough courage not to give in to his demands, not to lie face down. Instead, she pulled away from him. Then she turned towards him and looked him in the eyes. It's a bold move, but she had nothing to lose. She never blinked. She just stared at him. She had to do anything that she could to save her life. She tried to be nice to him. She tried to talk him down. She kept asking him, "What is wrong? Is there anything she could do?" She even offered him a hug. She just kept talking and talking. She really thought that at any moment he was going to kill her. She said, "Alan, I'm your friend. What are you doing?" He repeated his demands again like a robot. He was in a trance. His eyes were blank. It was as though he wasn't really there. And she put her hand up to block the gun and said, "Alan, I am your friend." She knew that she had to try everything and anything to save her life, to get out of that house. She said, "Alan, God bless you." She was trying to snap him out of it. And she told him, "Whatever you're doing, this is not the answer." The last thing he would ever say to her would be no when she offered him that hug. While she was talking to him, she was inching toward him. And with every step, she noticed he was backing up. It's as though he hadn't really thought this through. He didn't expect her to challenge him. He seemed like he didn't know what he was going to do next. She had taken control over the situation at that point, but that control would be short-lived. Somehow, she managed to get him to back up all the way to her front door. She knew she had to get out that door. She had to run. She had to get away from this lunatic, but how? Your mind is racing. It's your only chance, and you probably feel an unbelievable amount of pressure not to mess this up. She was finally able to reach the doorknob. She didn't want to take her eyes off of him. She was feeling around for it while she had her gaze locked on him. But then she realized that he had locked the deadbolt when he had come back inside. His back was facing the door, and she's in front of him. She had a split second to decide what to do. Thoughts were racing through her head. If you know self-defense, do you risk it? Do you try to knee him as hard as you can? But what if he shoots and you end up wounded right in the chest at point-blank range? She knows that she needs to unlock that door, but that means she needs to take her eyes off of him. She has no choice. She turns her head for probably half a second just to gauge where the lock is, then turns back toward him, looking him in the eyes, and she very slowly and calmly reached to unlock the door. And she does. This is her chance, maybe her only chance, and she decides to run for it. She quickly grabbed a hold of that doorknob and she turned it as fast as she could, and she swung that door open with all of her strength and she ran as fast as she could. And right when she got out there, she screamed for help, something she regretted as soon as it came out of her mouth because he panicked and he opened fire. She was running so fast, her long legs just flying up, that the first shot hit Christine in the bottom of her foot through the skin right between her toes, and he shot again back to back. The second one hit the middle of her back, piercing her spine, going right through her. A through and through wound coming out right underneath her breasts, shattering her spine and instantly paralyzing her from the waist down. She was running so fast, she flew into the air and she grabbed her abdomen with her right arm, and her body swung around and she immediately fell to the ground on her back, right on her driveway. She couldn't believe it. She just thought to herself, my God, what just happened to me? Oh my God, I've been shot just like that. Meanwhile, Alan runs back inside, grabs his laptop and his bag, and gets back into his truck. Christine is screaming for help over and over again, just screaming, please help me, somebody help me, please. And no one's coming. She's probably wondering if anyone could hear her or if anyone would care. She was completely helpless and in total disbelief. She thought nothing in the world could be worse than this, but Alan wasn't done with her yet. Christine heard the truck engine turn on and she saw the reverse lights go on. He was backing his truck over in her direction, purposely coming her way. He was going to run her over. She tried so hard to move, to get out of the way. This is beyond terrifying. She had nowhere to go. She was lying in the path of a monster. Now she just started screaming to him, please, please don't run me over. Please don't run over my face. All she could see was this big tire coming straight toward her. In that moment, she was preparing for what she thought would happen next, that the tire would run her right over, breaking each one of her ribs and slowly making its way up her chest to her collarbone, and then further ending her life as her head sunk down into the ground. He did run her over. Absolutely freaking unbelievable. First, the tire ran over her right foot, the same one that had been shot. Then he proceeds to drive the tire right up between Christine's legs, right towards her private parts. Unreal. As the tire made its way onto her pelvis, she knew she was being squashed. As she watched that tire coming closer, she kept praying and just saying, dear God, please help me. The tire moved onto her abdomen and it was just inches away from her face. Then he took the steering wheel and he just turned it over her body, moved the truck tire back and forth. And then he decided to move the truck back over all the same body parts, ending with her right wrist. She was alive after all of this, just laying there in shock that she had just been run over and left for dead. She couldn't understand what she had done to deserve this. After he backed over her, Alan just drove away. She was screaming as loud as she could, nonstop, blood-curdling screams, and nobody came. Nobody was helping her. She could only rely on God in that moment, so she just kept praying and praying. Finally, it seems like her prayers have been answered. She sees headlights in the distance and she thinks, it's gotta be the cops. The car stops right in front of her house and she is so hopeful. She finally thinks someone is coming to save her. Thank God. But that hope turns to horror. The vehicle stops. The engine is still running and she could hear someone coming up the driveway slowly and calmly and quietly with no urgency to save her life. This wasn't someone rushing to her aid, and she started having a really bad feeling. It just didn't seem right. The next thing she knew, she was face to face with Helen. It was him. He came back. Why? This can't be happening to her. And she's screaming for him to stop as he reaches down and he grabs both of her ankles. He didn't say anything. He just dragged her limp body over the gravel as her skin on her back, on her elbows, it was just being scraped open against the ground, and he dragged her to the side of the house, across her grass, and behind some bushes. She was waiting for him, to end her with one last shot. After he dragged her, she said, "Alan, why did you do this to me? Why?" And he didn't say a word because he's a coward. Instead, he turned his back on her, leaving her there like trash. And then he bends over to pick up the two spent shell casings and he walks away and drives off. She just kept waiting for him to come back again. She was screaming louder and louder with all the strength that she had left. And it was around 11 p.m. now. Her neighbors weren't heartless. They did call the police, but the police told them to stay inside. They didn't know if the perpetrator was still out there. Christine didn't know what was going to happen. It took them 11 minutes for the authorities to respond, even though the station was right down the street. Wow. I can't imagine what that would be like. That's probably the longest 11 minutes of your life. She finally heard the sirens, and then she could see the flashing lights, and she called out to the officer and says, "I'm here. I'm over here." And finally, there was someone there to save her. And when the paramedics made it to Christine, she begged them not to let her die. This is so sad. Christine was conscious at this time. She was alert. Before she made it to the emergency room, she thought this might be her only chance to tell them who did this to her. She told police it was Alan Sinclair. She gave them a description of him and of his truck. Christine is clinging to life. The search was on for this evil monster. Investigators go to Alan's home. His girlfriend says she doesn't know where he is and she hasn't seen him. Then they get a lead. One of Alan's neighbors finds his laptop hanging from a fence in the yard. Inside, they found a letter written by Alan to his girlfriend, and it seemed like Alan had ended his own life or was planning to. They had to work fast. They put a bolo out to all the agencies across the entire country. That same day, later in the afternoon, they get yet another lead. Someone has spotted a man slumped over his steering wheel in a hardware store parking lot 45 miles away. When police approach the vehicle, they see a gun on the passenger side, on the seat, and a lifeless Alan with his face up against the steering wheel. And they're just pounding on the window for him to wake up, and he didn't move. It was over 100 degrees. This was a death trap, which appeared to be something Alan did on purpose. He wanted to overheat and die. They were able to get in the truck, pull him out, and put him under arrest. Before they even got him into the cop car, he already admitted to shooting a woman in Fort Lauderdale and that he was trying to end his life. This is so scary. When police searched his vehicle, what they found is disturbing. In the trunk was evidence of the lengths that Alan had planned to go to torture Christine. This was premeditated. Alan planned this. There was duct tape, a knife, latex gloves, condoms, a 12-pack of condoms, 6 zip ties that he made into handcuffs, and a gallon of bleach. You're smart. You know what these items were for. He didn't plan on Christine being alive after that night. He planned to abduct her, torture her, have his way with her, end her life, and just wash away the evidence with bleach. Disgusting. Christine was in emergency surgery. Doctors were racing to save her life. Christine did survive, which is a complete miracle. But her life was still over in so many ways. She knew when she had been shot that she was probably paralyzed and would never be able to use her legs again. And after she came out of surgeries, doctors gave her the bad news. Her spinal column had been shattered. And although they did their best to piece it back together, there was nothing they could do. She would never be able to walk again. Christine's beautiful body was also terribly scarred on both sides of her back and her stomach, just hundreds of staples from the surgery. The pain was unbearable for weeks, months, even years. So much rehabilitation. She had to learn how to do a lot of things over again just to carry out everyday tasks. Many people really lack an understanding of how difficult it is to live with a disability, especially alone. But luckily, she did have wonderful friends and family members who took care of her this whole time and were there by her side. It's so heartbreaking to me, but even more so because I talked to Christine. We had an hour conversation just before Christmas. And I have to tell you, it's the closest that I've ever been to a case like this. We don't usually get to hear from a survivor. The cases I usually talk about are heinous. They leave no one behind, but Christine lived. And I'll tell you what happened to Alan in a minute, but Christine is the one who's important here. I learned so much on that phone call. I was so surprised that she even replied to my message. When I watched her story on TV, on a couple programs, I don't know why, but I had this sick feeling that there was something left out, like something wasn't accurate, and I usually don't feel that way. I was planning to do a video right away after hearing this horrible story, but amazing story, but instead, I just wanted to fact check, especially because there was someone I could potentially ask, like, is this how it happened? And that's when I learned the broadcasts about Christine's life-altering situation had been dramatized and turned into entertainment pieces rather than allowing her truth to be told. So many things were untrue. One program, whether intentional for added excitement or a better plot, or maybe an accident, made Christine out to look like a flirt who teased men. Yeah. And then there was a blog post made about her in reference to this show. And there were men in the comments saying that Christine got what she deserved, that she led Alan on, that Christine had a boyfriend. So why was she letting Alan fix things? These men had watched a story on TV with details that weren't true, adding in an entire scene that never happened. One where Christine's supposed boyfriend walks in on her and Alan while she's bandaging up his arm after he hurt himself with the hurricane shutters. Never happened. They made it look like there was this whole confrontation between the two men, and none of that happened. You just sign a contract and you give these networks the right to your story. These were things Christine never agreed to. She didn't know that was going to be part of the story. Oh, and if you're thinking that people like Christine or families of victims are well compensated, let's just say I was shocked by how little they give back. Make no mistake about it, Christine didn't deserve any of this at all in any way. No woman deserves this, flirting or not flirting, rejecting a man, even changing her mind. One show added an entire stalker story to the mix. There was no other guy stalking her, but for the shock factor or to add suspense, like, oh, I wonder who the killer will be, they added in an entire storyline, and then they would mix in things that Christine said in her interview, but put them in out of context. I rewatched it and I cringed, and it makes me question, how many stories have I watched with information that's not true and the deceased person can't say anything? This is someone's real life. Facts are important. I asked Christine if it was hard for her to watch these reenactments of her story, and she said she gets annoyed when they're not correct, that it's frustrating when they're inaccurate, and I totally see why. During one reenactment, the actress is lying on her stomach and almost crawling away, and Christine told me she was on her back. She was not face down. She watched this entire thing play out. He was running her over with a tire practically in her face. She couldn't crawl. She was paralyzed. But the thing that bothered me the most for her was that she told me every show or interview that she did would cut out the parts about her faith in God. Whether I believe the same thing or something different, it doesn't matter because it's not my story. So I told her that I wasn't going to cut any of those parts out. I asked her if there were any signs. Did she have any clue Alan would do something like this? And she said no. She said, I was caught off guard. I knew him. How would I have ever guessed this guy was there to hurt me? He was an acquaintance. And I asked her what she would tell other women like her, women like me, or someone like you. She said it's not just about trying to get people to be more cautious, but just being okay saying no, not opening a door, especially at night if you're all alone. Even if it is someone you know, if they're coming over unannounced, don't answer. You have no obligation. Christine said there's a statistic that shows you're more likely to be killed by someone you know than someone you don't. And it's different now. We have the benefit of a Ring doorbell and cameras. We don't have to go face to face like Christine did to tell someone to leave. She didn't want to be rude. That's not the type of person she is. But you see, she said, I shouldn't have opened up the door. I just should have said, it's not a good time. I didn't want to be rude. I'm not a rude person. But living alone, being a single woman, you really can't trust anyone. You really don't know what's going on in somebody else's mind. And I couldn't agree with Christine more. I asked her why she thinks Alan did this to her. There are a few reasons she thinks he did this. First of all, she said, he had some sick obsession with me, a fantasy that he wanted to carry out on me. He always liked me. Maybe he fantasized about me. I was vivacious. I was outgoing, energetic, and he was more introverted. He thought she was an easy target. She also said He had been watching me that day, evidently. The neighbors say they saw him come in and out of her driveway. With their security cameras, they could see he came in and out of the driveway 3 times before I came home. He pulled into the driveway to see whether or not I was home. As soon as he knew I was home and alone, he knew that was his opportunity, that I was going to be available, and I didn't have anybody there with me. And she's right. These individuals are opportunists. They see a way in, and they take it, and they take something they want with no concern of what it's going to do to someone else. So Alan knew she was inside. Maybe she couldn't have ignored the knocking, but maybe he would have left if she didn't answer, if she pretended she was asleep. But would he have looked into her windows or come back another day? If these people are going to do something, they're going to find a way to do it. I asked Christine if sharing her story helps her. She said, "It's just knowing that by sharing my story, it could help even one person not to have to go through what I went through, then it's worth sharing. That's what's important. Awareness." She went on to give a message to anyone out there who may have these urges to hurt others. You may not start out as a mean person. You may not want to do these things, but maybe you're thinking about them. She said, "Anyone that watches your videos on true crime stories and may be thinking about committing a crime or are actually truly deliberating on it or premeditating it, thinking about hurting somebody else, they may not have self-control. And she wants you to know to please seek help. Talk to somebody about it instead of keeping it inside and acting upon it. You never know what somebody else is thinking." And she's right. We don't. I asked her what emotions she feels on a daily basis. She said, "I get mad because I'm in so much pain. And I think to myself, this isn't fair. He took my life from me. He didn't kill me, but my life isn't the same. I believe through my faith in Christ, I will see my loved ones again, my dad and those people that were close to me that I love." Then she added this, and I found it very interesting. She said, "Maybe my life was on a bad track before and I didn't always do the right thing. You never know. This could have saved my life in some way. I'm just thankful. I'm thankful I'm alive. Every day is a gift." In closing, I want to tell you what happened to Alan and then what Christine thinks of it. Alan Sinclair was charged with first-degree attempted murder. He pled no contest. Let's watch this video of them at his sentencing.
"My whole life flashed before my eyes. And now I'm paralyzed. And the doctors say I'll never walk again."
She was his therapist, alleviated his pain. He became obsessive.
"He just opened fire immediately. Boom, boom. And I was running so fast, the first bullet hit me through my foot as I was running. And the second bullet just blasted through my body, my spine. I was paralyzed in midair."
She had never done anything. We were friends for several years and hadn't seen each other in a long time. "You didn't deserve anything that happened to you. And I wish I could truly give you an explanation."
Did he sound like he was sorry? Because I don't like the way he worded that apology, if you can even call it that. He said, "You didn't deserve anything that happened to you." Happened to her? What do you mean? You mean what you did to her? Then he says he can't give an explanation. He's the only one that could ever offer her an explanation, and he won't, because he's a weak coward. And it's not necessary to explain, because this is Christine's reality. The judge sentenced Alan to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
"I'm sentencing him to life in prison."
Christine told me the judge said to Alan, "That means you'll be leaving prison in a casket," as he should. There was a very sensitive question that I asked Christine, and I'm so thankful that she told me the answer. I asked if she would ever talk to Alan, if it's ever crossed her mind, because she seems like such a loving and forgiving person. She said she didn't tell him that she forgave him at the hearing because she couldn't do it. She doesn't know if she ever could or will. It's a big thing to ask. She explained that as a Christian, she knows that she should forgive others as Christ has forgiven her for her sins. But this is a big thing. This is a big sin that's left her in really bad shape and chronic pain because she can't work. She's confined to her home in a wheelchair. And she's very lucky. She's had amazing friends and family and even organizations that have donated things to her, I asked her what message she wanted to give all of you. And she said, "I'm just grateful. By the grace of God, I survived. Prayer got me through some of my darkest hours. Just to get me through each day, I would pray to God, please get me through this day. God, please, just another hour." And you know, when I would pray, miraculously, my pain was lifted. My pain would diminish right after my prayer. I could get through the next hour. That's Christine's truth. So I will leave you with this. Our lives can change in an instant. And truly, we are so lucky to be alive. Christine is so lucky to be alive, but so very much has been robbed from her. Every time you're upset and when life gets hard, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to take a minute and let that out and have a good cry. But remember Christine's story. She told me her friends have said they think of her and her strength anytime they're feeling down. Gratefulness is powerful. I'm grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you so much for allowing me this time to tell you Christine's story. And Christine, I love you. You are strong, courageous, and beautiful. And I just thank you so very much for taking the time to speak to me one-on-one. I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for this opportunity to be in this position that I'm in, doing what I'm doing, and I hope I can continue. Thank you all so very much for being here. I really do appreciate it. I will see you in my next video. Bye.